everyone. Welcome to Online Voices. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Online Voices. This is your host, Herb Glenn. I'm excited about recreating another opportunity to be able to voice concerns and raise issues in our community. We are here this evening really putting together the framework. Today is one of our first opportunities in which we will co-host with a number of different individuals. Myself, including Minister Thomas Ellis and Sharon Hand, who happens to be one of the community voices that has had a powerful impact on motivating and inspiring individuals to get actively involved with a number of different things that are happening in our community. We're very happy to have an opportunity to be able to do the things that are really encouraging and to develop the strong relationships that are necessary to have the kinds of opportunities to talk about positive things that are happening in our community. We have a couple of individuals that have now logged on. Let me see if I can bring them in. Hello, caller.
Yes, Abdul Muhammad.
Hey, Abdul. Hey, brothers, what's going on, fellas? Thank you very much. What was that, Minister Allen? Well, I'm glad to see Brother Abdul is on the line.
I'm hoping Sister Sharon and Carlton Herb, I'm on the line, and I just want to say to all the listeners out there who's listening that you're listening to Online Voices with your host Herb Glenn, co-host Minister Ellis and Sharon Hand. Brother Abdul, I am so glad that you're on the show
thank you, brother.
Tonight because, and I'm going to step back for a minute, but one of the reasons why I'm glad that you're on the show tonight is because earlier today in the Star Ledger, I seen where there was an apology that was sent out from the Newark Anti-Violence Coalition saying that they apologize for what took place on the steps of City Hall. Now, I'm going to fall back a minute, let Herb do what he do, but and then we can come back, and I know Herb may want to talk about that as well, and we can come back and talk about what actually took place. I was there to pray. I was there to speak out against the violence, something we've done for almost 15 years now in the city. And I want to just get your take on the whole nine so that people can hear actually your take, because you were there, I was there, Abdul Salam was there, Sister Manera was standing with us, and Brother Love. It wasn't a whole lot of people standing with us, and I want to get your take on that.
First and foremost, you know, I'm limited to a lot of what I can say or discuss relative to the issue at hand because there's some legal issues pending, and I don't want to jeopardize what is taking place as far as the legal community is concerned. Needless to say, I will respond definitely to the apology that was sent out by the NAVC. And I accept it, you know, but needless to say, I don't think that the apology in itself was for us, those of us that was on the stage. I think it was more or less geared towards the community. And if you read closely into the apology, it's political. It is very much political. And it's grandstanding. You know, even today, an article came out today in NJ.com with regards to the incident at hand, and then at the end of the article, it says that it was nothing more than us grandstanding. So I just want the community to know that no matter what our side say or their side say, we was there to stress a point, And the point was that violence in our community needs to be addressed from a governmental perspective and from a community perspective. And sometimes things happen, you know, for reasons that we have no knowledge of. You know, sometimes the creative force is our hand. And as I look back in retrospect for what happened last Wednesday, you know, I'm torn like many people in our community because that's not the image and that's not the message that we want to convey to our community. However, within itself, sometimes God forges people together for reasons, you know, that they can't bring their own selves together. So hopefully outside of this, you know, it would allow us to lay some comprehensive programmatic programs down to help diminish crime in our community, because I don't think we can eradicate it. We can only reduce it.
Well, you know, and that's very important that you said that. And, again, I'm going to turn it back over to Herb, but I was just so glad to hear that the Online Voices community, which is Herb, the host, and myself and Sister Sharon, reached out to you and that you would come on to the show. And
yes,
I understand the legal piece that's going down. But let me say this here. As one who was standing on the steps with you and with Salam, I know for a fact we did not come to incite any melee.
Right, absolutely.
We came, and I was there to pray and to speak on behalf of families who have lost loved ones, but we came to just raise the issue that 105 murders in the city, hell, somebody needs to speak out. Is that right, my brother?
Absolutely, absolutely. When we look at even one murder versus 105 murders is too much. We're starting off the year already with two murders, you know. So, you know, yesterday I was interviewed by a reporter, and one of the things that the reporter had asked me was, you know, when we look at, you know, the violence in our community, and the police department have said over the years that they have reduced violence or they have reduced shootings and murders, you know, by such and such percent. And my argument is simple. Whether it's the Barack administration, whether it's the prior administration of Cory Booker or Sharp James administration, you know, the fact of the matter is we cannot project, you know, we cannot project and say, you know, and forecast and say that violence is, are we going to reduce, we're going to reduce violence in 2016 and we're not going to witness 105 murders again. We don't know. You know, and see, when we start playing and skewing with numbers, and then when it happens, you know, then now we're back at the drawing board and saying, well, you know, this happened, we had a spike in this and all that. Stop playing God. None of us are God. You know, and I think that's the bottom line, is that, you know, we don't know what's going to happen between this conversation and tomorrow. You know, we don't
Absolutely.
Know what's going to happen with regards from this conversation in 6 months from now. Six months from now, God willing, we might be still at two murders, hopefully. But 6 months
Absolutely.
Months from now, we might be at 600 murders. We don't know. You know, all we can do is just get our boots on the ground and work to help solve this epidemic, this disease in our community together.
All right, and then I'm gonna turn it over to Herb after this last question, because I wanted to get this out off the top for those who are listening so they can hear your perspective and what we were there for. And lastly, and you were in the news media, and let me say this, Ab, do you know that story went viral all over the country?
I was reading
articles from Kentucky News, Orlando News, Atlanta News, New York. But here's the point. And let's be clear, and we have to get Salam on the next time to also talk about this. But let's be clear. Nobody was on the steps of City Hall to attack the mayor. Is that clear?
Right, right. Absolutely. We started the press conference off, and I indicated, you know, when I got up and I said, this is not a bash of the mayor. I clearly not only did I say that, I clearly indicated and I said that to the anti-violence coalition, we recognize and award your works. And in fact, if people listen to closely the video, the anti-violence coalition members that was there, they gave me a round of applause for saying that. Absolutely. You know, they literally gave me a round of applause for saying that. You know, so like I said, there's some underlying and other ramifications that I can't discuss because
that's
what I feel, and that's what, you know, certain other people, you know, that have investigated it on my side feel that, you know, it was escalated. I don't want to name the names, but it was escalated via other individuals. And everybody have a right. Everybody have a right. You know, when it's presented, you know, before, you know, the judicial system to defend themselves. That's all.
You got that right, brother. And so I'm gonna turn it over back to Herb and let Herb pick it up from here. I'm online. I'm co-hosting, and I got some things we want to talk about, brother Herb. Back to you.
So certainly in our situation, as we have been able to regard it as being one of the most crucial priorities of our lifetime, we have to also take into account things that we started overnight. Many of us, I know that I got involved in the vineyard close to 10 years ago with you, Brother Ellis, and the street doctor. And at that time, Abdul, you were a member of that coalition of outreach advocates, really looking to do positive things with our youth to do the kind of influence productivity that's necessary to change this paradigm of failure that's happening in our system of society. It's not something that's brand new to New Jersey. Obviously, the president himself has made a noble effort to look at strategies that will help us to control the problems that are happening, that we're having, you know, with arms. But we know that the problem is not so much people getting shot either.
Absolutely.
Yesterday, an individual got stabbed to death by a vagrant. You know, majority of the problems that have occurred have been domesticated. And
right.
As you know, again, going back to the efforts that we have improved upon and gotten to this point that, you know, United for Peace is necessary, we need to go beyond the protest. Protesting has proven to us that it had happened on that day, and that is where we don't need to continue to go. So
right. The
effort that we're putting here while we're discussing the relevant matter of what happened in the current event is to really emphasize our need to unite for the purpose of making the change that's necessary. And that is where we are going to continue this conversation going forward. And Bill, there is a resident bank that many are not familiar with about you. You're not no Johnny come lately. You didn't jump out here and say, hey, I don't like what's going on, and I'm going to say what I have to say. This was an attempt to talk about doing something positive that is going to help change the problem. And it never really came to existence. Can you share with us exactly what that proposal really was and how we were going to try to apply it and implement it in our community?
Right. One of the things that, you know, I realized a long time ago when Minister Ellis and myself, Street Doctor, and Salam Ishmael and Larry Hammer, all of us was out in the early, even Sister Jackson, you know, in the earlier days. One of the things I realized a long time ago when we was doing anti-violent caravans, and then we extended into doing the Stop the Killing Tour. And I always use this analogy, Brother Herb and Brother Ellis, that we made a stop. We made a stop in Irvington on Ellis Avenue. There was a six-year-old, remember that, Minister Ellis? There was a six-year-old little young man there, right? And his mother brought him to us. And it brought him to the GM crew, all of us that was out there, and said, my son said he wanted to be a car thief, right? None of us at that particular time had a place or institution. you know, that we could have took that young brother and guided him and directed him and gave him some influence. So I realized at that particular time, yes, the caravan was necessary, but the question I began to question myself, are we sensationalizing and are we romanticizing off of the pain of our people, and we give them a feel-good message for a minute and then we leave and then the problem still remains the same. So I went to street doctor, and I went to the street where I said, you know what? We need a center. We need a place. We need a facility, you know, where we could take our young people. And thank God that the Nicholson Foundation at that particular time was merciful enough, you know, to hear us and to listen to us, and they paid our rent for 3 years. So out of that center, what we was able to do, we was able to start a plethora of programs for our young people, as far as our PISC program, mentoring program on Saturday, basketball program, boxing program. We had contracts with diapers. We had contracts with Juvenile Justice Commission. So it was actually doing the work. You understand what I'm saying? And I think going forward, what I was trying to stress, you know, the other day, is that we got to go back to that. We got to get into programmatic. And when I say programmatic, I'm not meaning, you know, programs to the point where we just program people out and people become program junkies. No, our people need places. That's the one thing when you look at the civil rights movement under Dr. King and Abernathy and all of them. They not only organized on the street, but they had a base. And we as activists today, we do not have a base that we can bring our people to. And not only on top of that, we are broke ourselves as activists. We are poor, just like our people. So how can a poor person, you know, that don't have no economical prosperity for themselves, talk to another people that's broke themselves and don't have no economic prosperity for themselves? So until we understand what economics is, we'll never be able to change this thing. We're going to always be except looking for crumbs from government to give for us what we can do collectively for ourselves.
And, you know, magnifying that whole concept of self-reliability is empowerment in regard to talking about what we need to be doing to get some type of a fusion, if you will, to develop those concerns where they are necessary. Now, we do know that the mayor has instituted and initiated a number of different activities in the community through the Centers for Hope. And the relationship that that environment has provided is still not enough.
Right.
Where do you think we can be able to complement that effort?
Right. Well, I think one of the things, I just want to step back a little bit. In light of everything that the Honorable Mayor Rasmus Rocker is attempting to do, which is a good thing, the problem becomes is, and I'm going to use this analogy. When Cory Booker was the mayor of Newark, he had family success centers, right? Not only did he have family success centers, he had the fatherhood center. Newark now had all of these different things. But when Cory left, those things left with him. So my question is, when government put things in place, do it stay in place long after you leave? That's my, you know, I think
obviously we know that there are maturities to any concept of investment. And if those investments do not find a method of being able to self-sustain itself, it will die. I mean, we can say that's what happened with the street warriors. And what really should have happened with the street warriors was that there had to find another way of being able to relate to keeping those activities going. Now, we do know that the boxing with, brother
Ali Muslim
still exists. We know that there are some encounters with the football. We know that, you know, those entities are still there, but they're fragmented and they're stressed. What I'm looking at getting an idea of is that in the presentation that you were making at that time, was it to create an attempt to find a way to complement what we already have going, and saying to the extent that we can be able to build a stronger foundation through the interest groups that now exist that are disparate because we have no financial obligations to give us
absolutely.
The momentum to influence people.
Absolutely, Brother Herb. Absolutely. Some, you know, Minister Ellis can attest to this. You know, and Minister Ellis, correct me if I'm wrong. When we years ago, when we founded the Essex County Anti-Violence Coalition, right? We went to each organization and told each organization to provide us your mission statement and your purpose and philosophy. Is that right, Minister Ellis?
Absolutely.
Right? Now, the purpose was so that we know what each organization is doing and does, so we don't duplicate services, right? So now if we know what each organization is doing, if Minister Ellis is working on gun control and he's good as an advocate in that area, there's no need for the street warriors to duplicate that. And the problem with the movement today, not only in North New Jersey but across the globe, we are stepping on each other's toes because everybody is doing the same thing. So, for example, when we look at violence in our community and we say from a mental health perspective, well, whoever is good or in that area with regards to mental health, we bring them to the table. Whoever's good as a counselor, as far as grief counseling is concerned, you bring them to the table. Whoever's good at organizing strategically the people and mobilizing the people, you bring them to the table. And then what happens is we have a one-stop shop. And that one-stop shop under that one umbrella, so when violence hits our community, whether it's domestic violence, police brutality, murder and all that, guess what? The victim's family, instead of them shuffling all around the city of Newark or elsewhere, we got a one-stop shop that takes care of all of that.
Now,
so the multi-service entity, you know, and Mr. Ellis, it's a great idea. The problem, though, is that we're segregated by community, by district, you know, the North Ward.
Yes.
Really doesn't want to articulate with the South Ward, and the leadership has that same, I mean, it's unfortunate that across the country that those are the ways in which we handle our leadership.
Right.
There has to be something that we can do to hold our leadership accountable towards some progressive method of giving them a agenda to stick to that we create.
Right.
Would you agree?
Right. Absolutely. Go ahead, Mr. Ellis.
Herb, let me say this. One of the things is when you're talking about, I have been dealing with gun violence in the community since 1993. Now, in 1993, I am quite sure, when I founded Enough is Enough Coalition, I founded it in Atlanta, Georgia, after a 13-year-old was killed by a stray bullet. In 93, I'm quite sure in 93 in Newark, New Jersey, there wasn't a whole lot of people focusing on gun violence.
That's true. All right? That's true.
So here's the deal. From 93 up into 2016, Enough is Enough Coalition and the Enough of the Violence Project have been given back to the community in various ways with preventive measures. The key to the whole thing with dealing with gun violence is preventive measures. One of the measures that you and I do, Herb, is definitely the tennis program. And we've been up in Westside Park for 14 weeks teaching tennis for young people. We don't get paid to do this. We give of our time. Why? Because we know that there's a need to reach out to try to steer our community and our young people into a positive alternative. All right,
right.
So tennis is a way that we reach our community and people to turn away from the gun violence. I coach Little League. I've been coaching Little League Baseball for 9 years, and I'm the commissioner of the Ivy Hill Little League T-Ball, where I get young people as early as 3 years old and teach them how to play baseball. We have a play up against the wall where we give young people an opportunity to perform and act. I teach acting. You know, and I do know, and all of the city and most of the people in the city know what we need to do to make an impact and a difference against gun violence. The sad part of it is that there's not people supporting certain people. So we have to rely on what we do and have been doing for 20-something years to make it happen. And if we can get people to get involved with our tennis program, with the acting program, with the baseball, with the photography program, one of the major things, and I hope people are listening, one of the major projects I started 4 years ago is called the Taste of Peace. The Taste of Peace project is where we give people an opportunity who can cook, right, to prepare their best dish, and we judge it, and there's a first, second, and third place winner of the people who cook their dish. The theme is a taste of peace. And let me go back to what happened on the steps of City Hall. We need a taste of peace.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, brother Herb, brother Ellis, you know, and that goes back to earlier what I just got finished talking about with regards to the 6-year-old young man, you know, and us establishing, you know, the youth center, you know, even when I was a director of the fatherhood program, so I moved from working with a youth population to now working with an adult population, and even like today, I work. My job that I have now, I work under with parole guys. So all my clients today are grown men and grown women that are reentering back into the community after incarceration. That's the population I work with now. Like today, for example, I took my guys to interviews today at Welch's Candy Factory. But the problem is that a lot of us, you know, and I think Herb, me and you talked about it earlier briefly. What I'm seeing from my professional standpoint, you know, as far as the violence is concerned, a lot of our men and women that are of age, our age, are illiterate. You know, you understand? And we have not addressed illiteracy. And Dr. Johnson at UMDMJ years ago testified and said that illiteracy is a direct correlation that's related to violence. And I believe that. You know what I'm saying? Because when people are uneducated, when people don't have the skills, that's why I always just say skills pay the bills. So when people don't have skills and they don't have education, they don't have foundation. So what happens is it perpetuates violence, and it causes people that ordinarily would be educated to force themselves to survive by any means necessary. And that's where programs like Mr. Ellis is talking about comes into play, starting our young people, so that as they're growing up, somebody is intervening and preventing those things from happening. So by the time they become an adult, they become a whole adult because now we caught them at a young age. We trying to catch 35 and 45 year old men at the age they is now, and unfortunately, to be realistically honest with you, it's hard building a 45 year old man or a woman that is set in their ways. It's just hard. It's hard. You understand what I'm saying? To speak into that spirit that's been broken, that's been frustrated, that's been angry, that's been let down by government, that's been let down by family, let down by themselves. So when you trying to change that type of individual, you dealing with a mentality. You know, and I think that government have not addressed that. We it's good we trying to work with kids, but you know, like for example, and I'm gonna shut my mouth. I give you a perfect analogy. Speaking about the street warriors, when we had contracts with juvenile justice, brothers, we had a contract with juvenile justice. We was going to Janesburg, and we was working with kids in Janesburg while they was locked up. 6 months prior to their release, we would go to Janesburg. When they come home, we did case management with those young people. We would make house visits, meet street doctor Alameen. The problem was when we made house visits, We realized that the problem was not the child. The problem was the parent, because the parent wasn't working. The parent was home. The parent didn't have no job. The parent didn't have no skills. The child was able to run around, do what they want to do. So we had to go back to the table with juvenile justice and say, you know what? We need to establish what they call a parent advocacy program. So now not only are we working with the young people, You know what I'm saying? We're working with the whole totality of the family. And I think that's where government agencies go wrong. We try to work with just the kid, and we don't work with the mother, and we don't work with the father. So what happens is the child returns back to that same environment that Minister Ellis and yourself can have at Westside Park. You working with all day long, but they got to go back home. They got to go back home.
That's a true fact. One of the things that is clear here, though, is that our objective is on the same page. We are unified, and it's not that you were up there on those steps alone. I mean,
right,
the reality behind what had happened appeared as if you were by yourself. But
right.
We know that the effort that you're making down in South Jersey in developing a literacy program through Matt Stevens and the program that we are developing here in the Vailsburg section with Houston Stevens and the program that we're here at Westside with, which I'm in relationship with Dale Caldwell, and the program that we have over in Westside Park, Wequid Park with Doug Freeman and groups that are here on the ground really putting an effort towards influencing not only the young people, but encouraging what kind of efforts that we could make for the adult who has been stressed. But there is not enough for them. And I agree with
right,
you
absolutely.
On that, Brother
yes.
Abdul. We have really a disparity in our community because of economics and definitely because of the disparity of housing in our neighborhood and the cost of housing in our neighborhood. The issue of homelessness is so important because there are a number of people out here today that are in their homes without any lights because they couldn't pay PSC&G, and PSC&G isn't mm-hmm. sensitive to their concerns and their problems. And many of them do have problems with addiction and areas that we are very limited being able to do outreach. One of the efforts that I thought would be encouraging were to be able to do something. When we had Hurricane Sandy, one of the most important efforts that had occurred was being able to tap into a database to identify residents that existed and then finding how we could be able to meet them at their needs. We don't
right.
even know who our neighbor is.
Yeah,
Brother
Herb, absolutely.
Brother Herb, now I'm glad mm-hmm. you mentioned that point. Now, do you remember the night Sandy hit, you and I and some other people were riding around making sure that people were safe in their homes, in their apartments. And when we went to a senior center, do you remember that? We were downtown.
Absolutely.
And we went to
and the lights
to
were
Nevada.
In the building.
Yeah, that's right. They had no light in the building. And what did myself, yourself, people who really care. So people need to know that yourself, myself, Brother Abdul, and a host of others who really care about the people, we try to reach the people right where they are as a minister. And this is what troubled me about the incident that happened on the steps of City Hall. Let me say this here. I'm there in my cleric robe. I'm there with my kinder cloth on representing Kwanzaa, that day
exactly.
with purpose, and I have my red, black, and green kufi on represent liberation of our people. So I'm there to show community, representing community in its full facet, and you and I and a host of others have done a lot of things that people don't know about, caring
right,
for people in the city of Newark. So I just wanted to say I'm glad you mentioned that Sandy piece because I remember, and check this out, the same night we were riding around checking on seniors, making sure they were safe, making sure they could get upstairs, making sure they had food, that same night we got over there by St. James apartment complex and they had shot three people on the corner by the liquor store. You remember that?
Well, let me tell you, you were on the steps with Abdul, and I can clearly understand your frustration. my frustration was that I had to watch it with a lot of disgust and disgrace. But what actor is saying this clearly enough. We are united. Now it is up to us to really not allow this to discourage the effort to move forward in a concerted way that's going to deliver a responsible citizenship to our community. And I really want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that goes with what we talked about earlier.
Right, the literacy, and we don't identify to the gun violence is a major problem, but we need to begin to identify to the real problems of our community.
Right.
And the literacy component is so clearly a problem because of the educational debacle that we have in our public school system. Which financing is difficult for an individual to continue his college education. We can go into a myriad of different things, but what I really want to stress here, Minister Ellis, is what can we do to help make the effort that you were doing on that day come into existence?
Well, let me say this here. One thing we can do, and I will say this on our show, Herb, I will say this. A lot of people know, but on Online Voices, one of the things I will say is I'm running for the school board in 2016, all right? And one of the reasons why I'm going to run is because of public safety. It's because of our young people in the new public school systems need better education. We need more people actively involved and in educating and helping our young people who need remedial help. And so the gamut, let me speak about the gamut. The gamut is that in our community, there's many ills, all righty? But let's talk about solutions. We know the problem. We see the problem every day. One of the things I applaud Barack Obama today about is his stance against gun violence. But it's deeper than gun violence because education is the key. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our young people who's getting caught up in the system, they're getting caught up because of lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
So we have to look at how I work in early child care. I work with 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds every day. I've been working with 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds for 10 years now. One of the things we have to do is how do we reach the 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds, give them a better opportunity for education so they don't get caught up in the system.
Right,
you see what
right.
I'm saying? The problem is we have to go back and look at where we are and then come up with the solution. The solution is we have to start reaching, like Brother Abdul said, I started a dad's group. The dad's group is a group of dads who are actively involved in their children's early childhood experience. The whole thing of the matter is it starts at age 3, 4, and 5.
Mm-hmm.
How do we reach them at that age and get them to be on the straight and narrow and then stay with them, follow them, and make sure that they don't get caught up in the system?
Right. And I will also offer this here. I will use this example, and my 7-year-old, for example, my seven-year-old, very early on, even until this day, her mother, and very much who y'all know, her mother and I have kept her involved in activities since
Absolutely.
She's been born. And I'm telling you, at 7 years old, she just finished acting class. Well, she's actually still in acting class. She just got a certificate. I put it on my Facebook page last week. So she just almost finishing TV and commercials and all that because that's what she wanted to do. She didn't did ballet. She didn't did gymnastics. She didn't did tap. She didn't did everything. And I'm telling you, that is important. You know, I remember as a little kid myself coming up, my mother and father exposed me and my brother to activities. My brother played on East Orange Ram football team. I was involved in other stuff in the school and all that. So when things are implanted in our children, like you said, Minister Ellis, at an early age, You know, what it does, it indoctrinates them to believe that success is possible. Success is possible. Our children don't believe that success is possible in urban cities is because they have not been exposed beyond their block. And that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, at one time, I live in a North Ward. You know what I'm saying? Right now, where I live at in the North Ward, the Boys and Girls Club is about to be tore down, and it's going to be condominiums. You know, the Boys and Girls Club on Littleton Avenue, gone. You know, all our urban leagues, all of our programs, you know, that we had in the 60s and 70s have vanished. You understand what I'm saying? So our children outside of places, thank God for West Side Park and all that, outside of stuff, places like that, our kids still have a place to go. You talked about earlier, Minister Ellis, you talked about prevention. This is where I think people go wrong in the social community. We try to give mentoring to individuals that have already demonstrated chronic behavior problems. That person don't need a mentor. That person needs somebody to intervene, so they need intervention. When we correct that person's behavior, then we assign a mentor to them to constantly guide them and direct them along the way to prevent further occurrence. So what we doing things backwards, bro. You know, we giving mentoring, you know, to people that have already demonstrated, you know what I'm saying, chronic behavior problems, you know, and shown
think,
that they're
I
not.
Mean, I mean, and I don't mean to cut you off, Brother Joe, but we have a short period of time, but you're right in terms of the need. But what we have been limited to is blaming government for the change. And
exactly.
I'm really emphasizing this because I believe that was the reason for the purposes of being on those steps on that day. Government can't do it alone.
Exactly.
And because government can't do it alone, the areas that we are emphasizing, unfortunately, have to have some type of professional investment.
Yes.
There has to be the we have to seek the medical community to create a coalition of outreach advocates within their profession to become a part of our movement to change the problems that we can't afford.
Right. And Brother Herb, that's what when we had a conversation earlier on January 13th, you know, and Minister Ellis, I didn't get a chance to inform you, but we have a private conversation about it and the details of it. But I was mentioned to Brother Herb earlier that on January 13th, we having a private invite meeting, and we're going to bring some stakeholders together from all across the state of New Jersey that include the professionals for the mental health, the counselors and all that, to come up with some strategic planning. Because my thing is this here. I, you know, when we have been on the ground doing, you know, everybody has their lane. Brother James and Tumba used to always tell us, you know, everybody has a role to play. You know, I just realized, you know, that my role is not demonstrating and protesting no more. That ain't my role no more. And you know, and ain't nobody going to force me otherwise. I see that my role can be from a more strategic perspective. You know, for example, like when Malcolm X decided to go to Mecca, you know, and the brothers and sisters say, you know, he's changing his philosophy with regards to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. No, Brother Malcolm wasn't doing that. He realized at the time of his growth, you know what I'm saying, that it was time for him to go to another level in his religious way of life. You know what I'm saying? That's why the Bible said, when I was a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. All of us evolve at some form in our life where it's time for us to grow to another level and be more strategic in helping our people while others are still doing it from a more grassroots level.
Mr. Ellis?
Well, Abdul hit it right on the head. You know, Enough is Enough Coalition has been a grassroots organization for 23 years. Grassroots. Now, most people don't understand what grassroots mean. So let me give you
what it
means. Grassroots means that you got people who are involved, who believe in your cause, And even if you're not receiving funding from the government, you still go out and you do what you do. Even if you don't get grants, if you don't have RFPs and you're not able to put together a proposal that can bring in millions of dollars, you still do what you do because you're grassroots. And Enough is Enough Coalition, and now it's Enough of the Violence Project, because Enough is Enough Coalition has been around for 23 years. And I branched it out to Enough of the Violence Project. That way we can work with people like the city of Newark with projects. We can work with grassroots organizations. We can work with the Urban League. We can work with the Boys and Girls Club on projects for prevention. That's always been what we stood about, prevention, and working with families who have been victimized. So let's not overshadow the fact that when there was 105 people murdered in Newark, do you know how many people was actually affected? And that's what we got to look at. So how do we try to reach those families who've been affected and then help them through comfort, help them through spiritual healing, help them with surviving siblings, and get them involved so that they don't wind up being killers. You understand what I'm saying?
Let me just real quick, let me interject. One of the things that Enough is Enough did, for example, years ago, our sister, Loretta Lindsay.
Absolutely.
See, this is when people talk about, you know, what we have done and have not done. See, Loretta Lindsay's grandson was killed on Alexander and 18th Avenue.
That's right.
Right? We rallied with that family. We put our arms around that family at the funeral, after the funeral. And then what happens is she joined the Enough is Enough organization, right?
Absolutely.
And then from that, she got involved in the movement, right? And then she became a secretary for the Street Warriors.
Come on,
see, people don't talk about that. You know what I'm saying? I give you another person, a personal testimony. Gloria Bradley, a mother, coming
home on
Prince Street, minding her business. You understand what I'm saying? That same family, brother, we put our arms around them. Them kids, we took them under our arm and all that stuff like that. When we took them under our arm, we began to guide them, direct them to the next level and all that. Faheem Williams, we was involved with that situation. And I can go on and on and on again. So my point is, we wasn't just demonstrating and protesting, but afterwards, we was getting them some real counseling, some real help.
Absolutely. Now, Brother Ab, let me say this here, because you named them three, and I want to say this because I know my man, Brother Dow Graham, with Pop.
Yes.
Come on, Doc.
Would be proud
of the fact that tonight we have a show, Online Voices, talking about what we've been doing. Now, do you remember when we were on Summit Street in East Orange?
Come on, the Vinny and Hippolyte, Faheem Williams.
Let me say this here, and I'm going to step back. Let me say this here. One of the things people need to realize, if you don't know what Enough is Enough Coalition, the Anti-Violence Coalition, United Youth Adult Conference, Brother Salam Ishmael out of Elizabeth, if you don't know what even my man Anthony Hall, but let me go back and say this here. When the mayor's sister, Shani Baraka, was murdered, it was Enough is Enough Coalition, me, Minister Ellis, who went to Pop, Brother Larry Ham, we organized a memorial and prayer vigil in front of their house. Right here on South 10th Street with the family and the community. Over 300 people came out to show their support for the Baraka family. But the main thing was I made sure that I had counselors and grief counselors on site for the people. And so we have a great history. We planted a tree in Jesse Allen Park
in
2004. Come on, somebody. So when people talk about people who, you know, I ain't going to go there, but we have a history in Newark. Enough is enough coalition.
Like this conversation we have in Minister Ellis and Brother Glenn, you know, like, I remember, and that's one thing. That's one of the things I keep is documents. I keep photos. I keep videos specifically for conversations like this here, you know. And I remember Minister Ellis this 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, we organized out of my church. We was having men's only meetings because we got the concept for Minister Farrakhan when he was doing men's only meeting, you know what I'm saying, up into the Million Man March. So we came up with that concept, said, let's have a men's only meeting. And at that men's only meeting, Brother Hurd, we brought together the GM crew, we brought together the bikers, we brought together every organization, and every week we would strategize, and that's when we came up with the idea to do the caravan. Then from the caravan, you know what I'm saying, the brother Ike and them from the motorcycle thing, they open up a club, and when they open up a club, we begin to start having our meetings there. And then it went from us having a meeting there to us saying, you know what, let's do a 14 city Stop the Killing tour.
Come on. Listen, you know, it is definitely delightful to hear you brothers living this over the engagement and the longevity of your history of fighting for a better Newark. And the kind of situation that had happened tarnished a great deal of it, but it did not stop the momentum.
Absolutely.
And what's clear here is that there was a purpose, there is a mission, and we will find the solution.
Absolutely.
United for Peace is important for us to continue to emphasize. We are going beyond the protest. It is time that we stop making noise and start putting together the reality of longevity and progress for our community. And this is a dynamic opportunity to begin it now, okay?
Yes,
new beginning. We're going to start from this point going forward to deliver and not stand around and destroy. It's so important that everyone who's listening to this conversation understands that it's not about who is the best and who has done the most.
Yes,
it's about what are we going to do together. And we're going to have to begin to look at it from that perspective.
Well, Herb, look, in the last 9 minutes, and you're listening to Online Voices with your host, Brother Herb Glenn, and co-host, Brother Minister Ellis, and our guest this evening is Brother Abdul Muhammad, a community activist, a community leader, and someone who cares about the community and is not afraid to stand up and exemplify courage, because that's what it takes to stand up in your community. It takes courage. It takes courage to stand on the steps of City Hall and say that we're tired of 105 murders in the city. We're tired of the carjacking. We're tired of people being robbed. We're tired of the businesses living in fear. We're tired of people who at 5:30 when the sun go down go in the house and can't enjoy living in the city. It takes courage to stand up against that. And I'm going to say this to the Honorable Mayor, Brother Roz Baraka, who exemplified courage. He's exemplified courage in this city all his life. He's exemplified courage way before he went to Howard University. He exemplified courage when he came back to the city and stood up and ran for mayor years and years and years ago. So this ain't no new thing. He exemplified courage when McCarthy, come on, somebody, when McCarthy was head of the police department and Booker was the mayor, and the chant then was McCarthy must go. And we all stood together. We all stood together to make sure that McCarthy gets out of Newark and the city goes in a new direction. Now he's the mayor. We appreciate.
Absolutely. And not only that, you know, we all recognize that, you know, that that Mayor Baraka and many of the other individuals who have taken on a leadership role in our community are the fruit of our labor. And they are the seed that we continue to work with to grow. And it is up to us to make sure that if it's wilting, we get next to his side and hold him up. There is no need to look at it as if this is an effort to create hostility in our leadership.
Right.
As I'm saying,
absolutely.
It's time that we stood up and let everybody know that they cannot do it alone.
Absolutely.
This evening
has
been a powerful opportunity for us to begin to look at the way in which we can bring a message out to our community. And I apologize to any other callers for some unfortunate reason. My internet connection has gone down, but this conversation will still be archived in this environment called Blog Talk Radio. And we will continue to develop the online voices in a most powerful and sincere way. So for next time that we do come on the air, I encourage you to please continue to make the effort to call in, and we will acknowledge you in our future conversations. Brothers,
and I would like
4 minutes
to
down to the line.
Public. And I would like to say this in closing real quickly, if I can. In light of what happened at City Hall, me personally, if I offended any of our citizens as a result of my, you know, words or actions, I apologize 100% myself to it.
That's on time, baby. And listen, man, nobody's going to be holding anybody to be any more perfect than what we can be able to be perfect for ourselves. But we'll continue to be with you. We will strengthen you. And we will make sure that whatever it is that you are doing is going to happen in a positive way.
Amen. Thank you, brother.
Hey, brother Herb, I just want to commend you on coming up with this venue, Online Voices. This is going to be the hottest, and I'm talking about the hottest blog show in Newark and abroad. Brother Abdul, I want to definitely thank you for coming on board and just laying out, you know, what's been going on in the city, but also the history of anti-violence movement in the city of Newark. And lastly, let me leave our listeners with this. I don't care what anybody say or who you with. If we don't come together, sit at a table, and work out a plan with everybody, then we're missing the mark.
Absolutely.
Well, it looks like we are spirited to be in that direction. We certainly hope that the mayor will be reaching out to you, Brother Abdul, Brother Ellis, in order to come up with a strategy that will be coherent and effective in a way that it shows that we are here to do the right thing. And we are going to be looking forward to developing more of a relationship of visibility. And
absolutely.
That being said, I want to thank both you brothers for giving me an opportunity to share with our listeners the powerful impact that communications is in our community. We Care Partners is a awareness community resource, and our effort is to develop ways using trending technology to involve and effectively encourage people to do what's necessary to create positive leadership in our community. Brothers, we got 60 seconds left. I want to thank each one of you, and looking forward to talking to you in the future. Have a good
evening. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. God bless.
Hey, Brother Herb.
God bless you.
As media people, let me leave everybody with this. information is power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Power to the people, my brother.